Support for United Front, a special season of Local Gov Life, comes from TownCloud. With simple monthly plans, TownCloud makes easy-to-use apps designed to deliver immediate value to small communities through a web browser. Visit towncloud.com/ICMA to learn more. Welcome to United Front, a special season of ICMA's Local Gov Life. I'm your host, Erica White. This season, we're celebrating women. Women who have not only earned the respect and recognition of their peers by achieving the role of Chief Administrative Officer, but also women who have been selected as their community's first female manager. Follow along with us as we celebrate the triumphs and contributions of six women CAOs who are breaking down many of the barriers they contend with in today's local government profession. I'm here today with Bonnie Svercek, City Manager of Lynchburg, Virginia, and one of ICMA's first female presidents. Bonnie, thank you so much for being with us today. So you are our first interview for this women's podcast, and we're so excited doing it. Yes, I'm so happy about it. Let's start by getting to know you a little bit better. Tell me about what inspired you to become a local government professional, and how did you get to where you are today?
I decided to major in housing and applied design in college at the University of Maryland, College Park. And during that time, I had an opportunity to be a co-op student at the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, where I learned a lot about housing and local government. And I think it was there where I began to think that I wanted to work in local government, that the federal government was just too far away, and that local government is a place where I could make a difference and not have to pass organic chemistry.
That is true. After that, did you go right away to Lynchburg?
So I've been in three different localities throughout my career. Well, actually four. When I got out of college, I got married and I worked for the City of Los Angeles's Washington office. Many cities around the country have Washington offices to help with grants advocacy, legislative advocacy, and that kind of thing. And so I worked for the City of Los Angeles's Washington office for 5 years and really found a place in terms of local government there. And I decided to go back to school and get my Master's of Public Administration, which I did from the University of Southern California's Washington Public Affairs Center. So here I am working for the City of Los Angeles in D.C., and I got my master's from USC in D.C. So people will take a look at my resume and go, oh, you're from California. It's like, no, I'm not from California. So I decided while I was working for the City of L.A. and after I got my MPA that I wanted to work for local government. And so I worked for Fairfax County, Virginia for 5 years as a budget analyst. And then I left there after talking to a mentor who brought me the job advertisement for the assistant town manager job in Blacksburg, Virginia, the home of Virginia Tech. And I used to say that, you know, the manager there just picked my name out of a hat of 147 names, but I then read a book that said, you know, don't belittle yourself. You were the best person for the job. That's why you got it. And so that's what I tell people now. It's like, you know, I competed against 146 other people, and in the end, I was the best person. And it makes you feel very humble and proud all at the same time. And that's, I think, a female thing as well.
That is one thing that we've been talking about for a while, that in addition to the wage gap and the just overall gender gap, there's a belief that there's also a third gap holding women back, which is a confidence gap. The example that you just gave is certainly an example of that. Other examples are that often women would apply for a job when they have 100% of the listed qualifications, but men may apply when they have 60% of the same qualifications.
Right.
Do you see the gap in other areas of your career and other women's local government experiences?
I think the biggest gap is really the barriers that we put before ourselves. And I think we just have to be so supportive of one another and let people see that you can do this. And I'll give you an anecdotal story, which was sort of interesting. So I became city manager in Lynchburg in July of 2016 after being the deputy city manager here for 16 or 17 years before that. And our mayor and vice mayor are elected among the council members. So on July 1st, for the first time in Lynchburg's history, both the mayor and vice mayor were female. We had had a female mayor before. The mayor and vice mayor were female, and here I was also the first female city manager. So the press wanted to make a story out of that. And their question to me was, so this is a historic day in the city, you know, what do you think? And my answer to that question was, here's what I think. I think that today is a day that younger women can see what they can become. They can become a city manager. They can become a mayor. They can become a vice mayor. And I think the more we tell those stories to younger women, particularly, the more women in local government leadership is going to change.
That's a very inspiring story to have all three women in the top jobs in the same city.
We're a very southern city, which makes it even more extraordinary. And I very proudly say that we are the only city in the Commonwealth where the mayor, the vice mayor, and the manager are females.
Have you had any challenges related to that?
I mean, there's always challenges, right?
Sure.
And sometimes, and this is just a really sad testament to our gender, in that sometimes we're our own worst enemies, and we need to stop that. And that's much easier said than done, like stop being our own worst enemy. But it's true. I mean, I think we probably all have stories of that. And I can't say specifically that I've had that experience, but, you know, there have been times it's like, wait a minute, you know, if there was a man in any one of these positions, would you have said or done that or acted that way? I try to not focus too much on that because it doesn't matter a lot, because in that moment, that's not going to change. But if there's a window of opportunity that opens for me to, you know, have a private conversation, say, you know what, I don't think you would have acted this way when the former city manager was here and he was a male, or the former mayor when he was a male, or, you know, whatever.
And that takes a lot of courage to have to say that, and also to have to look at things with that lens. But it's an important conversation to have, because there's this implicit bias. Sometimes people don't even notice that they're doing it.
Absolutely.
Getting back to your career a little bit, you were deputy city manager for 17 years, and then you were appointed to your current role as the city manager of Lynchburg, which was groundbreaking, as you were the city's first female manager. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between the deputy role and the top job?
Yeah, so they're incredibly different. And I think that, and I've had this conversation with some of my colleagues, that we don't talk about this enough among ourselves, about how different these positions are. As I was going through the interview process and the recruitment process to become city manager, I would literally see people that I knew on the street, and people were incredibly supportive. And they said, you know, you've been doing that job all along. Of course they'll choose you. And it was a great opportunity for a teachable moment regarding the council manager form of government, as well as that there's a huge difference between being the CEO and the COO. So I use the example countless times of, so let me put this in perspective for you. So do you believe that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, and Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, do the same job?
Not at all.
Not at all, of course. So they said no. And then it was like, oh. And then the other part of it was, you know, there's a big difference beyond, you know, the buck stops here as the CEO and the COO. I said, if I become city manager, I will go from having one boss to having seven bosses.
Oh, right. Of course, the council.
Yeah, right. And there's a possibility that some of them will change every 2 years. So the sea change between the positions is huge. But what I will say for sure, while this is a very hard job, and I believe that the job, the career of a chief administrative officer for a local government is getting harder and harder because responsibilities just continue to get pushed down to the local government, from the federal to the state to the local government. But what draws me to come to work every day is that I know that I make a difference. And that's inspiring. As hard as it is, when something positive happens, you go, oh, I had a part in that. And it may have taken me a while to get to this point. I had a part in making a difference in my community. And I think that's what this profession is all about. I think it's what actually ICMA's Life Well Run campaign is all about. It's a great profession, but we need to make no bones about it, that it's hard.
Oh, for sure. I love talking to people like you who are so passionate when I get a chance to talk to ICMA members, because they are so dedicated and passionate about what they do. And you don't find that everywhere. And it's wonderful. It's so wonderful. Another pioneering moment in your career was actually with ICMA. From 2012 to 2013, you were the 99th president of ICMA, and at the time, only the second woman to ever serve in that role. And also, as deputy city manager, you were also the first non-CAO to assume the role. So you had a lot of glass ceiling breakage in your presidency. Can you talk a little bit about your experience being ICMA president?
As I was thinking about my answers to these questions, it was a great opportunity to really reflect on some of the things that I have been so incredibly blessed, and I can't think of another word, to be able to do. And being president of ICMA was one of those opportunities. I mean, you know, only 98 people before me in the whole world have had that opportunity. And to be the 99th president was pretty cool. In fact, this is sort of silly, but I was talking to a colleague of mine, and we were talking about what another colleague who was the president, and we were talking about our numbers. He was in the low hundreds. And I go, oh, but I get the coolest number. I'm 99.
You do have the coolest number. It's true.
You know, 100 is pretty cool, but 99 is really cool. That I had an opportunity to, and this is why I chose to put myself forward as a candidate to become president, is this profession has given me so much. And I felt like I needed to return the richness to the profession that it has given to me. And so when I was chosen as ICMA president, I first sort of went, oh gosh, what have I done? Like reality strikes, like, okay, now I really have to do what I said I would like to do. So as president, I had three priorities. I was a very focused president, and my three priorities was to create the task force on women in the profession, to increase member engagement by asking all members to do just one thing during that year as an ICMA member, whether it be to mentor a younger person or to serve as a range rider or to go to a conference or go to one of the summits. And then the third thing was to double the number of student chapters. And I think I was successful on all three, which I am, again, very humbled, but extraordinarily proud of.
I will say that your year was one of the most exciting years of ICMA.
Oh, yeah.
We had the 100th anniversary celebrations coming up. The Just One Thing campaign was great. The Women's Task Force was really productive, and we still have the student chapters. We have so many of them now.
I know.
You've really planted the seeds for some great things that are still happening.
This podcast is sponsored in part by TownCloud. TownCloud is the complete modern app platform designed and built exclusively to meet local governments' needs. Our enterprise suite of apps are designed to be cost-effective, innovative, transparent, and fun. From essentials like Agenda to next-generation tools like payments, TownCloud provides built-in templates and step-by-step tutorials to get you up and running in just a few hours. Take a look at towncloud.com/ICMA.
I want to move towards a few more general questions right now, more on the topic of women in the workplace. Do you remember a time when your gender made you feel specifically challenged or discouraged, and how did you push through it?
So I'll relate back to that. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy. And I think that, sure, I think every one of us have probably felt those challenges or have felt discouraged. And when those times come, I seek and surround myself with other strong, inspiring women, because that is the best way to deal with it. And frankly, sometimes I think through it and I go, wait a minute, do I need to be wasting my time on this? Will it be more detrimental to really push back? Or is it really better to just surrender? And frankly, sometimes it's better to surrender. Certainly not to allow yourself to be walked all over, but sometimes there are situations where I am not going to change the outcome. Sometimes it's with other women, sometimes it's with men, but, you know, time management in this job is really a critical skill set. And you just have to decide what battles you want to choose.
What do you think is a significant barrier to female leadership?
I think it goes back to the confidence piece and our own courage and willingness to take the risk. I think it's a huge barrier, and it depends on where you are in your life, what your family situation might look like, what your support system looks like. I think that in our profession particularly, getting groups of local elected women to understand the importance of female leadership in the CAO position, coupled with mixed gender leadership. I think it's just easy to gravitate to the way things have always been and not even be aware of the decisions that the electeds are making. We've spent a lot of time in the League of Women in Government, which was an outcome of the Task Force on Women in the Profession, talking to ourselves. If we keep talking to ourselves about women CAOs, we might as well be talking to a wall. Because while we can step up and apply for the jobs, we need the narrative to get to the people that are making the decisions on who the CAOs are going to be. And why there is such incredible strength in female leadership and mixed gender leadership. And if you don't mind, I want to take a little tangent here.
Sure.
And the tangent is this, that in the private sector, it has been proven through research that when there is mixed gender leadership at the top, that the profit margin at the bottom is greater.
Really?
Yes. Now, I would love to see, and I challenge some graduate student out there to figure out how to make that same statement for local government, what that would look like, and even more so, what does it look like in local government when you have dual male leadership in the CAO or CAO and assistant or deputy level? What does it look like when you have mixed gender leadership? And what does it look like? And this is the one that I really want to know. What does it look like when there is dual female leadership? And what are the metrics that are going to tell us that there is a difference? Or does the research show there's no difference? If some grad student doesn't take this on sometime in my retirement in years to come, it's on my list. It's on my bucket list.
Well, I hope somebody pursues it. Maybe somebody from our student chapters or ELGL out there is listening and needs to do a grad thesis. Consider it.
Yeah, there's the challenge.
I love that challenge.
I will be happy to mentor and help whoever that person is.
You heard it here. Call Bonnie. Call Bonnie.
Amen.
And on a related note to that, we do have a lot of women joining the conversation about growing the profession and women in local government. But how would you envision men getting in on this conversation to support and be enthusiastic and mentor women to take on the top roles?
I think we, one, need to do a better job of inviting men into the conversation. And I need to give a shout out to, and I know some men are going to get left out of this, but three men immediately come to my mind. Ted Staton, Scott Hancock, and Alex McIntyre were all men who joined the Task Force on Women in the Profession. And I can't remember the exact numbers, but let's just say in round numbers, there were 60 women and about five brave men who participated in the task force. And I also have to say how in really just the past year or so, how incredibly proud I am of ICMA for embracing the recommendations of the task force and doing things like these podcasts and #SheLeadsGov.
We're very excited about these inclusivity movements, being able to do so many things. And we have so many enthusiastic members, which is the only reason we can do anything at all. So it's just a great time. In your own organization, do you have any inclusivity goals among your staff?
From a leadership perspective, we're doing very well. Over 50% of our leadership team, so my directors of my departments make up my leadership team, are female. In my office, my deputy is a white male. My assistant is a black male. And, you know, it's great because we all bring a different lens to problem solving and strategic planning and that kind of thing. Our biggest challenges are really in public safety, fire, police, EMS, recruiting women and minorities to enter those very male-dominated fields. We need women and minorities at the recruit level, but we also need them at the command level. But until we get them as recruits, we're not going to have the pool to have them at the command level. So that is really, really challenging. And we talk about it and we are focusing on it.
One other question that women often get, and I think men should get too, though, is the importance of work-life balance for both men and women. How do you cultivate that, especially in a city manager role where you could be moving across the country multiple times in a single career?
I think it's always going to be a challenge. I make a promise to myself, like every Sunday night as I'm getting ready for the work week, on a night that I don't have a meeting, I'm going to be home by 6 o'clock to have dinner with my husband and not make him wait till 8 o'clock or 8:30 when I get stuck in the sea of email or somebody just grazed at my door and now I have to finish returning phone calls or whatever. I think that is our biggest challenge. I think it's the biggest challenge for any CEO, CAO, public, private, nonprofit. You just have to be really deliberate about it. And I have to say, I fail pretty miserably.
It's hard for everybody, I think.
Yeah.
One other struggle, and this is big right now in the news and across the country, is the sexual harassment scandal that's touched entertainment. It's touched government at many different levels. Have you ever had any issues or incidents with sexual harassment or incivility in the workplace, you or your colleagues? And if you were to have that, how would you be able to deal with it?
I'll share a story about a colleague who has told me that she was not the CAO, she was an assistant, had a male mayor who would occasionally kiss her on the cheek after a meeting, after a one-on-one meeting. Then he tried to kiss her on the lips. She said, "That is totally unacceptable and please don't do that again." And that never happened again. But she wonders to this day whether that cost her a future opportunity in that locality. You just cringe when you hear these kinds of things. And God bless her for confronting, right?
Mm-hmm. Especially at before this was such a big deal in the media and before people were more empowered to speak up.
Yeah, this was probably 15 years ago or more. I will tell you, this has been in the news here, but we are dealing with a situation in one of our departments where there are accusations of it being a hostile work environment, and we are doing our very best to address it. And that takes time, but it also takes deliberate action and zero tolerance. That's what folks are hearing from me.
So if a woman was starting out either as a young person in the profession itself or embarking on her first leadership role, what kind of advice might you give her?
The advice that I do give women is, one, call me if you need me. And two, just wherever you are, surround yourself with a really strong support system because it's really important. And sometimes that's really hard because of the visibility and nature of your position. But you have to figure out who your most trusted support system is.
How would you suggest going about finding support system and mentors? And what kind of role has mentorship played in the development of your own career?
I think that the League of Women in Government is a great place to start, as well as being at ICMA events. The ICMA conference, well, prior to the ICMA conference, the past 2 years, League of Women in Government has partnered with ICMA for a half-day women's conference, and it's been extraordinarily successful. We have been so pleased with the attendance and people who are coming to the conference maybe a little earlier than they normally would because the conference doesn't start till, you know, Sunday afternoon, and that we've had more than a few brave men also attend, and, you know, a shout out to those folks as well. I think that men and women in leadership roles need to make themselves available to younger people to connect up with, you know, another great organization is ELGL, Engaging Local Government Leaders. you know, they, I think, are working with ICMA on a mentoring program as well. So the resources are out there. I think our biggest challenge is making sure that the right mentee-mentor partnership happens. You know, I can say that at one point I was participating in one of ICMA's mentoring programs and I was paired with somebody and we just didn't connect. And I had to say, you know, this just isn't working. The connection is not there for me. I'm not sensing that it's there for you. So let's not continue this.
That's uncomfortable, I would think.
Well, it is. And it's not. I think for me, being authentic is really, really important. And it just was not an authentic relationship. So we ended it. It wasn't easy. I mean, whenever you end a relationship with somebody, it's not easy, but it was important. You know, it was important for her and for me. I think you asked, how did I get to where I am today and who mentored me or inspired me along the way?
Yes.
Now, a lot of it has truly been hard work, sometimes being in the right place at the right time. The incredibly supportive husband who was with me every step of the way through serving 3 years on the ICMA board as the Southeast non-CAO, and then again, 3 years in the president role, you know, incoming president and then past president. I could not have a better partner. Passion and persistence, I think, are critical to being successful in this profession. And a woman by the name of Marcy Jones guided me in writing my first personal manifesto and where I wanted to go and what I wanted to be in my career. And when you commit yourself to writing those kinds of things, like not typing, but writing, because there's a whole neurological thing that goes along with writing things down versus typing them. It's your narrative vision board, if you will. And you write things, you see things, you believe things, they come to pass. And so I'm a strong believer in visioning and mindfulness and staying attuned.
I've got one final question for you. To celebrate women, ICMA is asking people to use hashtag SheLeadsGov and tell us who they think the groundbreaking women are in the local government management profession. Who is that to you?
In no particular order, I think Jan Perkins in California was pretty groundbreaking in her career. Vola Lawson, who was the city manager in Alexandria, Virginia, was groundbreaking. Joan McCallum, the former CEO of ICMARC, was an amazing supporter of women in ICMA, women in government. Peggy Maris, who was the first female ICMA president 10 years before me. Pam Antill, my soul sister, who has been the president of the League of Women in Government and has been one of the most persistent, passionate women I have ever met in my life. All of the women that have been firsts in their communities, and all of the members of the Task Force on Women in the Profession. I love that hashtag SheLeadsGov. That's so awesome.
Yeah, me too. It's exciting to call out these women's accomplishments. All right, I think that's it. I think this was great. Thank you so much for taking time out of your extremely busy day to talk to me today.
ICMA's work on this makes me almost speechless, but I'm so proud that I helped sow the seed for this and that it's finally growing and blossoming. So thank you to ICMA.
That's our show for today. Thanks for listening. And thanks again to Bonnie for her time and insights. After you hear each of the stories in United Front this season, join the conversation on social media. Look for the hashtag and Twitter handle SheLeadsGov and use it to share stories about the groundbreaking women in local government that you know. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to our podcast channel and catch up on all the seasons of Local Gov Life at icma.org/podcasts. Also, please share on social media and tell a friend about us. Thanks for listening to United Front, a special season of ICMA's Local Gov Life.